From Utah Public Radio, this is Undisciplined. I'm Matthew LaPlante. The spring of 2020 may have been the peak of new podcast creation. As workplaces were shutting down and people were socially distancing and just about everybody was looking for something other than COVID to talk about, thousands upon thousands of new pet projects were launched online. And they lasted a few weeks in many cases, a few months in many others, because the truth is that a lot of people who think they have a great idea for a podcast figure out over time that it's actually quite hard to come up with new things to talk about week in and week out, even about subjects that they personally find fascinating. And maybe that's what you might have expected would happen to Emily Lewis's podcast, which is called The Ripple Effect, which is primarily about issues surrounding water in the United States. But Lewis, who launched her podcast in March of 2020, has since that time produced more than 170 episodes of her show on issues like water data collection, airborne snow observations, agricultural conservation, and water quality control. And that doesn't just make her one of the few people whose podcast has survived nearly 5 years after it was launched in the midst of the COVID pandemic. It's made her one of the most diversely informed and well-connected water experts in the United States. When not behind the microphone of The Ripple Effect, Emily Lewis is an attorney at the Salt Lake City law firm Clyde Snow, where she advises water right owners, water conservancy districts, municipalities, mining companies, and shareholder irrigation companies on natural resources and water law. She's also the manager of the Utah Water Banking Project. Emily Lewis, welcome.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here with such an introduction like that. My goodness.
Emily, you grew up in Wyoming, and I think, you know, a lot of people who grew up in the West, as I did as well, sometimes don't actually realize that they live in places where water resources are stressed because that's just part of the background. That's the status quo. But you had a really visceral experience in your 20s with water when you worked as a rafting guide.
Yeah, my family actually was a big rafting family from when I was a young age. And so that was kind of how we spent, you know, our summer vacations out on the river doing multi-day river trips. And so it was something that had always been something we'd done as a family. But I think I didn't really understand or kind of really get academically interested in water until my 20s when I was a raft guide for a good number of years, mostly in Idaho. And just kind of being on the water and seeing, you know, the difference both in terms of a free-flowing river like the Maine Salmon versus, Hell's Canyon, which is dam controlled, both in the quantity of water, you know, water levels going up and down depending on kind of what the dam was doing that day. But also, you can literally taste the difference in the water.
So you can see, you can even literally taste the differences from day to day, from river to river. And tie those differences to humans, right? To decisions about damming and release, to decisions about pollution and restoration, all of those things.
Yeah. Or just kind of like, how did this come to be? Like, why is this, why is it one day the water is, 4 feet above where it was yesterday? And why does this taste different? And that was just kind of like curious. And, how do we protect our lands that we love? How do we protect agriculture? Because, I am from the West. And how do we, really also understand that that is a large part of the economy here? And so, just kind of very curious about, what is the background story of what's happening here?
Was there a moment when you were sitting like on a raft in a ravine somewhere and it just clicked to you that those decisions were being made and impacted by attorneys?
I think anyone who spends a lot of time in a boating community will soon realize that there's a pretty classic kind of catalog or canon of books that get, moved around between guides and guests and topics of conversation. If you're on the river a lot of these books just kind of come to you, and then you realize that, oh, these are policy decisions. This is interesting. This is something that I might be interested in doing kind of more on a professional level.
So you head off to law school. And this is where everyone who wants to become an environmental attorney ends up going into commercial litigation and patents and tax law. But you did manage to come out the other end as a water and natural resources attorney. And a lot of people who are mid-career attorneys like you, I mean, this is something you have to do at any stage of any career, but I think it's especially important in law careers. You have to develop and maintain expertise. And people do this mostly through study. They read a lot. But there's this cool hack that you have figured out that we know about on this program as well, which is that if you have a podcast, you have an excuse to call really smart, really interesting people up on the phone and go, hey, will you spend a time with me telling me everything that you know? And then they do it. And not only they do it, but they do it for free and they're actually excited to do it.
Yeah, I love it. Also, I'm a chatty Cathy. I mean, like, reality is that, like, when the pandemic hit, it's funny that you mentioned the pandemic in the introduction, because we had actually planned to launch Ripple Effect before the pandemic, and we had recorded our first three shows and we released them on March 12th, 2020. You know, like, literally, like, everything shut down. And so it was kind of just really actually wonderful timing, because it was such a great way for me to still reach out and have this, you know, have those conversations with people and continue to build a network. But honestly, just really realistically, it's really been a selfish endeavor, because I'm just curious. And water is just such a broad, such an interesting and very complicated topic that you will never run out of things to talk about. There's always some other angle you can look at it, some person who wants to talk about what they're doing because they're excited about it. And so it just really is like the perfect topic for something like a podcast.
And when you say we launched, I mean, Clyde Snow hosts this, has supported you in doing this. What's the sort of like business argument here?
I think it's not so much a question of the business case for a podcast, but just being really fortunate to be in an environment that really supports and nurtures attorneys to do what interests them. And so Clyde Snow is a smaller firm. We're 40 people, 19 partners. You know, the cohesion of the firm are people who have very specific interests, and they kind of build a practice around those interests. And one of the things that Clyde Snow has been known for many decades is water. You know, Ed Clyde is a seminal water attorney here in the state of Utah. Steve Clyde is our current senior attorney at the firm and has had decades himself in water. And so this podcast was kind of just a way to continue that practice, but in a little bit more of a contemporary fashion, and one that really fit the moment, honestly, like with the pandemic and with 2020 and with the fact that the number of water issues we have are compounding every day. And the conversation is, you know, more complex and more collaborative. And so I think the firm just really thought that, you know, if this is something you want to do and you think that you can do it in a way that is successful and, you know, paints the firm in a good light, then go for it.
I feel like Ed Clyde would have really liked this. So this is a guy who like represented the state of Utah, where the Upper Colorado River Compact was concerned for years and years. And, you know, if you know anything about the River Compact, you know, like, it's all about win-wins, right? Like, there's the only way anything ever changes in the compact, any agreements ever are negotiated within this very, very old agreement that sort of like locks people into, you know, how much water each state gets. And Clyde was famous for like figuring out ways to communicate with his counterparts in other states.
Yeah. And I feel like that's a theme that's very, very, very consistent inside water. Steve is the same way. Our other water attorneys across the state, you know, there's probably about 20 to 25 pretty dedicated full-time water attorneys here in the state of Utah. And one of the things that's so wonderful about practicing in this field is that we are really our friends. You know, we are really congenial, because it's not like a divorce where one side versus the other side, or litigation where there's a winner or a loser. But, you know, if we don't win, we all lose with water. And so I think everybody comes at it with a very, very real and practical problem-solving approach. And in terms of a legal career, it's really exciting, because that's where the fun stuff happens. You know, that's where the cool ideas about contracts, and that's where the cool ideas about collaborative sharing, or, you know, really innovative ways to kind of stretch this very limited resource or manage it differently. And so I do think that that collaborative nature of problem solving is just kind of really at the heart of water, actually, here in Utah.
As part of the Utah Water Banking Project, of which you were the manager up until just recently, there were four pilot projects that explored what it means to do water marketing. Which one did you feel presented sort of like a best practice approach moving forward?
Ooh, that's a good question. So a little different question. So the purpose of this project was to basically explore and build water marketing strategies for the state of Utah by employing our newly passed Water Banking Act. And a water bank here in the state of Utah is a very specific kind of leasing arrangement that allows you to get certain privileges under the law if they're approved to be a water bank. But a water bank is just one kind of water marketing strategy. And when I say water marketing, we're really just talking about finding willing lessees and willing lessors and trying to figure out what is the structure that's going to, you know, figure out that transaction between the two of them. How do we figure out share water, pricing the water, moving the water, getting the right approvals for the water, et cetera. And so really the purpose of the project was to do these four pilot projects. And then from the four pilot projects, we tried to distill kind of like basic themes and basic questions that we could kind of put into usable materials for people who are interested in exploring water marketing to use on their own. Because these are kind of complicated topics. And what we found was that there was a lot of interest in water marketing, but nobody really knew how to even start the discussion because it quickly goes into, do I need a change application? Do I have X? Do I have Y? Do I have Z? And so what we did is in each of the four pilots, we learned different things and then kind of put them into these more generally applicable materials. And so, for example, we basically determined from our efforts, there are five key marketing milestones. There are people, there are markets, there are logistics, there are transactions, and then there are approvals. No matter what kind of water marketing effort you're trying to undergo, you're going to have to address those five things. And so what we did is through our conversations by putting these four pilots together, we came up with a really simple step-by-step guide that asks incredibly specific questions under each of those milestones. And so people's pretty basic, you know, like, do you have the right people in the room? But like the second one of markets, you know, one of the things we found is that people could be interested in water marketing, but the basic dynamics of supply and demand may not exist in an area. Like everybody may want water when no water is available. And so even kind of those basic 101 questions, they're really important to actually go through and check off. And so really the whole purpose of this project was to organize and order the thinking about how people can approach water marketing strategies. And so really the whole project is best practices.
When you were engaged as the manager of the project, did you find yourself with questions and the way to get the answer was, you know what, let me find an episode on my podcast, or maybe even more so, I can kill two birds here. Let me get an expert on that on my podcast.
Oh, definitely the latter. I was like, I know nothing about that. I'm going to go find that person. We're going to talk about it. And then we're going to make a podcast about it. The great thing about this particular project is it was basically clay. Like there was, you know, they were like, here, we got to figure this out. You can do whatever you want. And so we had incredibly good project partners. We had HDR Engineering who helped us with our communications. We had Westwater Resources out of Colorado helping us with our market stuff, Division of Water Resources, Division of Water Rights. Like we're all working together. And so this cool thing about this project is we were kind of doing it as we were going. We were making new things every day. And so because the statute was so new, I joke about this, about how I feel like I had five plates spinning at any one time, and I had one plate for each pilot project. And originally we only had three pilot projects, and then we added a fourth pilot project towards the end. But then we basically needed to set up the administrative process to get these banks approved as well. So we kind of also had a ton of work before the Board of Water Resources of literally making like PDFs and forms, you know, about like how we even get these things approved, let alone set them up. And then we had this fifth kind of overarching plate of saying, now that we've kind of are in here and doing these things, how do we distill the important pieces into these kind of scalable and more generally applicable water marketing materials? So we had a lot of things going at all points in time. And if there was ever a chance to talk to somebody, we'd call them and do a podcast, or a lot of times we had our project participants come on and do a podcast and talk about, you know, a specific element that they were involved with. And so really the podcast was very much a part of, you know, that exploration and that project, because it just was helpful. It was a helpful tool for kind of uncovering key information at the moment we needed it.
Has the cumulative effect of talking to all of these different experts, a new one practically every week on water issues, shifted your thinking over those years on larger issues of water rights and management?
No, I mean, yeah, for sure. I don't know how it can't, you know, like there's just so much activity in the space right now. And there's so many exciting things. And, you know, I often describe the podcast as it's kind of like the conversation you have when you go to a conference and then you have the hour conversation with somebody in the hallway after the presentation. Like, and that's the most interesting part of the conference for you the whole time. I feel like that is the podcast. And because it's so broad based and because, you know, people are so gracious with their time and expertise, you just really get to learn a lot. And that, you know, sinks into, oh, somebody talked about that the other day. Oh, you should maybe connect these two things. Or, oh, this person had this great idea about how to set up a carbon market for a water treatment plant. And I was like, oh, I wonder if that could apply over here. And so it very much just becomes a lot of threads to pull from to, you know, build something different and beautiful and new. I just don't think there's been any other point in time where so much has been happening that like there's just so much opportunity to apply all these new things.
Can we talk a little bit about One Water? This is this different way of thinking about water as something that's more cyclical, right? Capturing it, using it, and treating it before allowing it to return to the natural world. How much of our water stress do you think is alleviated if we can just get better at the One Water goal?
I think One Water is an incredibly helpful tool to think about water. You know, it's you know, and those who aren't familiar with One Water, it just basically is there is no new water. You know, the drop that falls from the sky that ends up in the reservoir, that goes into our house, that goes into the toilet, that goes into the effluent, that gets back put into the river, that evaporates up into the sky and turns into the drop, you know, like it is all one water. And I think moving to a vision of the cyclical nature of the water cycle and how that fits into our infrastructure is really important, because I think it also takes into account like watershed health. You know, we just don't need to build our way out of our water problems. You know, a lot of the solutions might already be there by just looking at it differently, by not having as dirty of water enter our water treatment systems, by having better watershed health. I do think though that, you know, One Water is very helpful when you have a 10,000 foot view, but I do think that water also doesn't always happen at a 10,000 foot view. And so I think a really good example of this is a couple years ago, we had a bill pass that was going to, or does, prohibit water reuse projects inside the Great Salt Lake Basin, because, you know, there was a concern that reusing the water would reduce the return flow from, you know, water treatment plants that would go to the Great Salt Lake. And so the goal of the bill is to be very helpful. But that being said, that also kind of limited the ability of local municipalities and local water providers to move their pieces around the chessboard. You know, where they're like, ah, well, this water use project here would be really helpful, but we intend to help the lake by doing something over here instead. And so it's a helpful tool to kind of think about the problem, but the practical application still is a little bit siloed and a little bit disparate, because that just is how it is. You know, the practical reality is we have, you know, 25 municipalities along the Wasatch Front, you know, and they're all doing their own thing and trying to help out and trying to be as collaborative as possible. But at the end of the day, you know, someone has to build a treatment plant and someone has to operate it.
This is a common theme in, you know, like environmental concerns, is that, you know, on the one hand, there's an idea that like, look, we could probably, if we were starting from square one, we could have figured out a way to do this better, but we're never starting from square one. Our cities are where they are. Our infrastructure is where it is. Our roads and our bridges and, you know, are set up in such a way, you know, based on decisions that were made 100 years ago, 200 years ago. And so we have to also be realistic. And this goes for the law too, right? Like probably if you could go back in time, we would renegotiate the Colorado River Compact in a very different way, but we can't.
Yes, 100%. Like I sometimes get a little bit frustrated when people are like, oh, but we should have done X 25 years ago. And I'm like, yeah, but we didn't. You know, I highly doubt when they, you know, approved the Central Utah Project and they built, you know, the transbasin diversions that bring our Colorado River water over to the Wasatch Front. Those planners, as prescient as they were probably not anticipating a 6 million population of Utah by 2060. You know, that's the other reality. I mean, our populations are just so much larger than I think anyone ever anticipated ever being in the West. And it's kind of a little bit of a double-edged sword because, but for those projects, we probably wouldn't have the population we have in the West. But we're dealing with the constraints and the limitations that happened 50 years ago. And now we have to kind of figure out how to adapt to that today. And, what do we do with that problem? We know what the constraints are. And so we have to figure out how to address them.
What still keeps you up at night? Like, what is the water challenge that you can see right now from your vantage that you're worried that we're not taking seriously enough yet? And this doesn't have to be just Utah-centric. Like, what is happening right now that you're like, man, we got to get on top of that?
I mean, the reality is climate change. I mean, and I don't know if we are going to get on top of it. And so I think that the reality is that we really are in it. We really have moved from mitigation to adaptation. And I don't think people really realize that yet. I think maybe, Helene and some of the hurricane issues that have popped up more recently are pretty visceral indication that we have moved past pretty healthy thresholds for climate change. And I don't say it keeps me up at night, but one of the things that I think about, one of the things that I think is maybe helpful to have a more frank discussion about is the fact that, like, honestly, a lot of what our water stuff and our water resiliency is going to be just dependent on what the hydrology does. And I think we're going to do everything in our power to be more responsive to that. I think we're going to do things like build aquifer recovery and storage projects so that when we have big years, we put the water in the ground. I think we're going to do things like, spill leases for when we have big years, we bring all the water we possibly can to the Great Salt Lake. I think we're going to do things where we have, slow drips of water to the lake every year based on leases and buyouts of water rights. But also at the end of the day, a lot of this is going to depend on how hot and dry the weather really is. And there's not much that we can do about that besides just, pull every lever we have in our tool belt to adapt to it. And so I just think maybe a more honest discussion about the new climate that we're going to be walking into would be very helpful.
The converse of that question is, what are you seeing that is working and has the most potential to get us to a future in which water is getting where it needs to be, being used and then treated so that it can be returned to the global system, that you think maybe people aren't talking enough about or aren't confident enough is?
Oh, I have to tell you, I think we're doing a ton. I think we are doing so much. And I think that the reporting's gotten a lot better about that. I think the public discourse, even from 2 or 3 years ago, is catching up on that. Like our ag optimization projects that we've done here in the state of Utah, we've spent hundreds of millions of dollars in trying to put in low flow sprinklers and piping canals and doing everything that's within our power to do. And so I think that, like, I think personally that we need to take a step back and just, like, look at all the things that we've done, because we've been so in the thick of it. It's hard to kind of, like, look at the progress we've made. We have way more to do. We're not done by any means. But I can firmly say from my standpoint, I do not see anybody sitting on their hands. Like, I see all those state agency personnel staying up late, working hard. I see all of our water managers who work on our reservoirs critically thinking about the issues. There's no magic water cabal out there that's like holding it back from the public and laughing. Like, that's just not the truth. Like, everyone's working incredibly hard. I think that being in this space, I find it incredibly heartening. I would love us to find a way to let that story get out more so that the public finds it heartening too, because the reality is that, and I say this pretty regularly on the podcast, we're going to ask the public to do a lot of hard things and they have to be with us on it. And so we want everybody invested in the solutions and invested in the progress we've made, because that's the only way we're going to keep making progress. And so I think just, getting those success stories out more and more regularly, I think that's what we should focus our energy.
Do you think that you'd be so optimistic if you were only, like really heads down working with clients rather than spending quite a bit of your time talking to people on the Ripple Effect podcast?
From my personal perspective, yeah, I think probably talking to all these people from all these different walks of life and all these different professions and all these different, niche things they're working on probably does give me more hope. And it probably does give me more optimism about the future, because it's just so cool. Like, I mean, people are really being creative. They are really putting their hearts into what they're doing. And you just hear the passion in their voices. They get so excited about what they're doing. And you just can't not walk away from that, like, feeling optimistic.
That's Emily Lewis. She is the co-chair of the Natural Resources and Water Law Practice Group at Clyde Snow and the host of The Ripple Effect, a podcast about water. Emily Lewis, thank you.
No, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for highlighting the program. You know, it's been a wonderful 5 years. Thank you for everyone who's participated, because it's just so cool to build a neat community talking about fun things.
Undisciplined is a production of Utah Public Radio. And if you happen to live in Utah, you can listen to us on UPR every Thursday morning at 10:30. If you miss us then, you can listen to every episode of Undisciplined wherever you get your podcasts. Our program is supported by the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Utah State University and from listeners like you. You can support our work at donate.nprstations.org/UPR. Our producer is Reagan Edelman. Our theme music is Little Idea by Benjamin Tissot. And I'm Matthew LaPlante. Thanks for listening. Now go have big ideas.